What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We've come to the end of a broadcast week, and it's time to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We've got four soundbites to play for you from this week's Issues Etc. audio. After we have played them, you give us a call, 1-877-623-6943, or send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc, or at our Facebook fan page. You can vote there too, facebook.com/issuesetc. We need to know who you are, where you're listening, and why you're voting for the soundbite you're voting for. We're giving away the LPR bundle package, which is a Luther Rose medallion, courtesy of Ad Crucem, the I Have Issues t-shirt, and an Issues Etc. pen, bumper sticker, note, and tote bag that goes to the listener with the best vote for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Soundbite number one this week comes from Rebecca Curtis. Here she is responding to the common adage that the church is just a building.
It's a lot easier to go to church if you don't actually have to go there, if you can just think some grand thoughts about God and, you know, meet him on the beautiful golf course that he also made. It's really a lazy way of maintaining your piety. And to actually go to church, to actually approach the holy ground where our Lord has promised to meet us, does require physical work and a sacrifice of our time and a real prioritization of the effort that goes into those things. And so the church is not an abstraction. It's a real place. And that is, of course, necessary because of the way the Lord meets us. He meets us in his word and sacrament. He meets us through physical means, and that means we have to have a place to go to receive them. And remembering that does keep us from kind of floating into the ether and losing a connection to the world in which we really live, the physical world. And when we talk about holding our ground, we're not just talking about defending our ideas or making an abstract space for the way we want to live. It is about having places where we can gather together, where we can assemble in the Lord's name, where we know that he has promised to meet us.
That's soundbite number one, Rebecca Curtis responding to the church is just a building. You'd like to vote for that one, or call in number 1-877-623-MYIE. Soundbite number two this week comes from Dr. Mary Eberstadt. We're speaking with her about race, abortion, and the left. Here she is about how the left often confuses white nationalism with the pro-life movement.
A writer for the Washington Post tried to connect J.D. Vance, who is a Christian and the author of Hillbilly Elegy, with white nationalism. This writer egregiously misquoted something that J.D. Vance had said, in which he observed that we have a low birth rate and it would be good if we had more babies. And the writer twisted this to mean that he was talking about white babies, when of course he was doing no such thing. So that seems to have been a pilot for what's a wider attempt to smear the pro-life movement by tying it falsely to racism. So we have this irony where if the pro-lifers had had their way, America would be a browner and blacker place than it is today. And conversely, the progressive people who have had their way on abortion ever since Roe v. Wade are inadvertently but really creating a whiter America. It's a great paradox, and it needs to be pointed out. The biggest reason that white nationalism is completely at odds with the pro-life movement is that the pro-life movement is colorblind. The pro-life movement is about the sacred value of every single life, no matter what color.
That's soundbite number two, Dr. Mary Eberstadt, confusing white nationalism with the pro-life movement. Vote for it, 1-877-623-MYIE. Soundbite number three this week comes from Dr. Matt Richard. We were speaking with him about how Lutherans become faux evangelicals. Here's an example of how Lutherans become Baptists.
doctrine and practice are separated. In other words, as long as I maintain a solid doctrine, it doesn't matter what I do with practice. And so what ends up happening is this, is if we can isolate our doctrine in our mind, saying, you know what, I'm going to be a Lutheran in my doctrine, that's over here in this compartment, but then in practice, I can embrace these other things in practice, and I don't have to worry about the practice because it cannot impact the doctrine. Now, here's the fallacy in this kind of thinking, is that all practice is derived from doctrine. And so if I take a different practice from, let's just say, a Baptist church, and I incorporate that into a Lutheran church, what I am actually incorporating is not a neutral practice. I'm actually incorporating a Baptist practice that is birthed out of Baptist theology. And so that theology, the Baptist church, now is being placed within the context of that Lutheran church service. So I have Baptist theology in the form of its practice, and then off to the side, I have my Lutheran doctrine. Now, what I'm not realizing is that it's like putting oil and water together in the same container. They don't mix. They're not cohesive. There's no symmetry between the two of them. And so you create a great deal of confusion and problems when you mix practice and doctrine that are not the same. Because again, doctrine always influences practice. And then also practice has a subtle way of coming back around, kind of a circle, a parallel pattern around, and it can actually impact our doctrine.
That's soundbite number three, Dr. Matt Richard, on how Lutherans become Baptists. Vote for that one, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Here is the fourth and final soundbite for your consideration, after which we will take a break and start taking your phone calls, 1-877-623-MYIE. Soundbite number four is Pastor Hans Feeney on Carson King and social media forgiveness.
People will say, well, we need to be merciful people. We need to forgive Carson King. There was an example of another brewery that promised to, I think, also take part in this and was trying to basically be kind to Carson King. But they said in their official statement on Twitter, we accept your apology. And that, to me, is a huge part of the problem, because he didn't owe them an apology. He didn't sin against them. He sinned against God, and he sinned against whatever people he was speaking against in his unsavory tweets. But to act as though we have an obligation to forgive someone who hasn't sinned against us is to claim that we have some sort of authority to judge them. So to say we should use our power for mercy rather than for condemnation is only true if we actually have that power. But God hasn't put us in a position of judgment over these people. He hasn't made any of us an authority over Carson King or anyone else in situations like this. So what we ought to do in situations like that is we should very much avoid saying that we need to forgive him, because all that does is legitimize the mob and convince the mob that we must have some kind of authority over him, or that he owes something to us, that he owes us an apology, that he needs to be groveling at our feet, none of which is true. He doesn't owe us anything. We, as good neighbors, we have a responsibility, if he needs forgiveness, to point him to where he can find it in the blood of Christ. And we have a responsibility to encourage those whom he has sinned against to forgive him and to be at peace with him. But we have absolutely no responsibility to forgive him, because he's not in our debt in any way.
That's soundbite number four, Pastor Hans Feeney, Carson King, and social media forgiveness. You've heard the soundbites. Now it's your turn. During this break, you can vote. You can give us a call, 1-877-623-MYIE. You can send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc, or go to our Facebook fan page, where we have less space for you to vote for soundbite of the week, facebook.com/issuesetc. If you appreciate Issues Etc., Talk Radio for the Thinking Christian, and Lutheran Public Radio, Sacred Music for the World, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio.
More topics, more guests, more Jesus. You're listening to Issues Etc.
What is the Lutheran witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
I know what's wrong, and I'm going to give you the fact. You got the vote.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, playing Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week live this Friday, October the 4th. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, giving away the LPR bundle package. That is a Luther Rose medallion, courtesy of Ad Crucem, the I Have Issues t-shirt, the Issues Etc. pin, bumper sticker, notepad, and our brand new tote bag. It goes to the listener with the best vote for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Let's go first to Clarksville, Tennessee, and see what Jan has to say. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Pastor Wilkin. I'd like to vote for Pastor Matt Richards today. As a Baptist who became Lutheran, I had been thinking about calling in and saying, why don't we do some programs on people that are unmistakably wrong and going the other direction? So I think this is a good thing, and I would like to see maybe you cover some more things about Lutherans who have gone the wrong direction. And also, thanks for the banter about tote bags. I sell tote bags in our church bookstore, so don't worry about it.
Thank you, Jan. I feel vindicated about the masculinity of the tote bag. Robert in Taylor, Texas says, I'm voting for soundbite number 3. As someone who came from evangelicalism into confessional Lutheranism, I am in full agreement with Dr. Matt Richard on the problems of bringing evangelical practices into Lutheranism. Eventually, the Lutheran side gets eroded down to the point where you have a church that seems almost embarrassed to be known as Lutheran, having dropped Lutheran Church from their name entirely and being indistinguishable from a pop-style church in their practice. The other problem you create is a synod-wide total lack of unity in practice. If you're a member of the LCMS and you're visiting somewhere that has an LCMS parish, unless you scout it out at first, you have no idea what to expect. Plus, people who are looking for a return to traditional practice might end up in the East or to Rome because their local LCMS parish is indistinguishable from the church they left. Thank you very much, Robert. Thanks for listening in Texas. Luther in Baraboo, Wisconsin says, my vote is for soundbite number 3. As Dr. Richard stated, Baptist practice and Lutheran doctrine do not mix. Many LCMS churches that worship like Baptists, praise band, little to no liturgy, are the same ones with Living Better sermon series and open communion during the Holy Sacrament, into which has become little more than snack time. Thanks, Luther, and thanks for listening in Wisconsin. Here's a vote for soundbite number 4 for Pastor Hans Feeney. Matt in Chattanooga, Texas. Pastor Feeney's astute analysis of our current cancel culture epidemic reminds us that the world has no solution for sin. All it knows to do with sin is to, one, hide it, or two, deflect by accusing others. Interestingly, this is exactly the pattern we see from the beginning as Adam and Eve, following their transgression, first hid, then cast blame in order to deflect the guilt falling upon themselves. Cancel culture didn't begin with social media. It began in the garden. The gospel is the only antidote for this particular kind of poison. Matt, thank you very much, and thanks for listening there in Tennessee. Let's see what Kathy has to say in St. Charles, Missouri. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Yeah, I vote for soundbite number 3, how Lutherans become Baptist. I'm from a Baptist background, and I'm very sensitive to it in the Lutheran church, and I'm sorry to see it as much as I do. People just don't seem to understand what they're dealing with when they think they're having a little fun. Baptists really make heresy look like fun, but it is still heresy.
Kathy, thank you very much, and thanks for listening in Missouri. Katie listens in Scarville, Iowa. Please shout this from the rooftops, Dr. Matt Richard. What an important distinction spoken so clearly about how doctrine affects practice and practice affects doctrine. My vote must go to you this week. Thank you. Very appreciative voter there. Katie, thank you for your votes. There's a vote for Rebecca Curtis responding to the church is just a building. Comes from Chris in West Bend, Wisconsin. She properly understands the church is a physical place that you actually go to, making sacrifice of your time for its gifts. A vote for Pastor Hans Feeney from Jim in Center Point, Iowa. He is correct that Carson King does not need our forgiveness. He may have offended others with his tweets while a young man and a teenager, but he has not offended me, and we should not legitimize the internet mob. The Des Moines Register and Bush Light do owe him an apology for their treatment of him. Thanks, Jim. This vote comes from Sam in Simpsonville, South Carolina. A great lineup as usual. This week, my vote goes to Hans Feeney. It's been said that if you want to know who the god of a culture is, find out what their blasphemy laws are. Pretty much every culture has their blasphemy laws, as they are written or just through societal pressure. But we need to dig a little farther in to really understand who the god of our culture is. Pastor Hans Feeney has hit it by highlighting the need that Carson felt to make a public apology and the notion that the general public should give him absolution, along with the question regarding what the current cultural blasphemy laws are. The other relevant question is, who is the primary offended party to whom confession ought to be directed? Who needs to dispense forgiveness in order for guilt to be relieved? To answer that is to uncover the true god of our society. It seems to me that the mob, as represented by Twitter and Facebook, is that god. Unresolved guilt is a major societal problem right now. If you're wondering why we as a nation keep adopting policies that hurt us and will continue to hurt us in the future, if it appears as though we've become collectively suicidal, it's because we are collectively masochistic. And we are so because of unresolved guilt. We have an atonement problem, so we attempt to atone by punishing ourselves. This is why white, straight Christian men are becoming the hated group. Someone has to be the scapegoat when there is no cross. I'll get off my soapbox now. God bless you guys and keep up the great work. Sam, thank you for your vote. Here's a brief vote. Actually, one-word sentences. Comes from Susan in Davenport, Iowa. She must have been listening to Jeff. Voting for soundbite number one, Rebecca Curtis. Well-spoken, easy to follow, engaging, objective, realistic, truth, relevant to all, God's blessings, Todd/issues, etc. Susan knows that brevity is the art of voting, too. Enola says, my vote is for Rebecca Curtis. The church is just a building because it was most meaningful to me. Thank you very much. Brandon in Austin, Texas says, my vote is for Dr. Matt Richard, How Lutherans Become Baptists. With so many churches leaving the liturgy for contemporary worship, we must be aware of the potential side effects. As Dr. Preuss writes in his popular book, The Fire and the Staff, doctrine and worship practice are inseparably linked. Worship style is not an adiaphron, but is rather an essential part of a church's theology. Let us all confess this vital truth and so preserve our doctrine through salutary worship practices in the same way we rigorously guard the pure doctrine of Jesus Christ. Thanks for listening in Texas, Brandon. Riley has a vote from Spokane, Washington. I cast my vote for Dr. Richard on the topic of how practice interacts with doctrine. I found it timely as I have been puzzling over this issue myself. One thing came to mind from the account of the Diet at Augsburg when Margrave George the Confessor was asked to attend a Corpus Christi procession at the Diet of Augsburg. He was reported to have said, quote, I would rather kneel down on this spot and have my head chopped off than give up the Word of God. The emperor wasn't trying to convert him to Islam or take away his Bibles. These princes from the beginning understood exactly what Dr. Richard was talking about. The Augsburg signers could not participate. Even as God knows their heart is in the right place, I wonder if we not only undervalue the stand these men took, but the faith by which we stand, if we look to Rome or Calvin or Finney to teach us. Here's hoping that that was worth a bundle, hint, hint, he says. Thank you all for another week of broadcasting excellence. Jill listens in Grand Rapids, Michigan, voting for soundbite number two. She effectively removes confusion with truth. She is clear and concise. It's not even really her, but the truth itself that marches you right into the best aphorism of all the four sound bites. The biggest reason that white nationalism is completely at odds with the pro-life movement is that the pro-life movement is colorblind. The pro-life movement is about the sacred value of every life, no matter what color. Thank you, says Jill. George is listening in Copenhagen, New York, and he's voting for soundbite number three. I believe a Lutheran church adopts pop evangelical practice, and it's a slippery slope that those Lutheran churches who adopt that practice, which I just stated, to become more of a Lutheran in name only church. Lorraine listens in Evansville, Indiana. I would like to submit my vote for soundbite of the week for soundbite number one, Rebecca Curtis, responding to the church is just a building. So many people make the lame excuse that God is everywhere, so why can't I worship him in my way on the golf course, in a tree stand, insert convenient spot for particular individual? The other three soundbites essentially would be less needful if all the aforementioned were participating, meeting God where he promises to meet us in the divine service. Imagine if everyone there would learn how the pro-life movement is colorblind, why doctrine and practice go hand in hand, and why we are responsible for forgiveness from their respective pastors. Despising God's word and sacrament ministry by not attending is where all society's other problems originate. Lorraine, thank you for listening in Indiana. This vote comes from John in Lancaster, Pennsylvania for soundbite number 3. I vote for Dr. Richard. The importance of doctrine cannot be stressed enough for those that practice the faith. Doctrine influences the practice of life, both inside and outside the church. Megan says, voting from Neosho, Wisconsin, I'm voting for Pastor Matt Richard's soundbite. His segment this past week hit home especially close for me. I was raised in a non-denominational church, but joined a Lutheran church soon after starting college. I've been incredibly blessed by Lutheran doctrine and practice. Pastor Richard is exactly right. No practice is neutral. There is always a reason behind practice. Doctrine is the reason or the why of the way we do things. Doctrine teaches, practice does too. Several months ago, I had a conversation with a friend who's a lifelong Lutheran. I asked him what his favorite hymn was, and he said, well, I can't really name any offhand. To me, that was heartbreaking. In his church, our incredibly rich hymnody has been confined to a corner of the poorly attended early service, while contemporary music was used at the later service with higher attendance. That practice teaches the congregation, quote, well, our hymnody really isn't all that important. Maybe following the historic liturgy isn't that important. And well, our Lutheran doctrine really isn't that important either. When a Lutheran church incorporates a Baptist practice or any non-Lutheran practice, that church diminishes Lutheran doctrine and in turn communicates and teaches that it is fine to do so. Thank you for your work with Issues, etc. The program is a tremendous resource and treasure trove. Keep it up. God's blessings in Christ, says Megan in Neosho, Wisconsin. We have some more votes here. This one comes from, let's see, David, Pastor Matt Richard for the win. Why Lutherans with a unique way to present timeless truth want to be an awkward but out-of-date version of the church down the street is silly. David, I agree. Caitlin says, Pastor Matt Richard, former Baptist, can spot the differences. Doctrine does influence practice. Gerald in Buffalo, Wyoming says, they are almost impossible to pick between. The top two have to go to Rebecca Curtis and Dr. Matt Richard. Curtis hits home here with the beautiful state of Wyoming as hunting season gets going in earnest, and that particular episode will be shared on our church's Facebook page. But I have to go with Pastor Richard for the win, as I received his article last week, and it has found its way into the insert of our bulletin. I lament how many people in communities in which I live where someone says they used to be Lutheran. Why? Because they do not realize how the practice influences doctrine, and they also embrace a false theology. What's worse is that many of them then leave the faith altogether. Thanks for these excellent sound bites. Darlis voting for Rebecca Curtis. I hear this all the time from people who believe they're worshiping God in the trees, among the rocks. They need to hear this sound bite. Thank you. Lydia listens in Olympia, Washington. I vote for soundbite number 2, Dr. Mary Aberstadt. I live in Washington State, where abortion is considered a fundamental right for women, often couched under the term women's health care, and is especially needed for poor and low-income women. They never seem to tie together the fact that most of these women are disproportionately minorities. I wish we could take Dr. Aberstadt's statement, more African-American babies were aborted than born, and post it on a billboard. Ardith in Charlotte, North Carolina says, seems an especially tough pick this week, but as one who regularly attends a Southern Baptist Convention church not too many years ago, my vote is for soundbite number 3, Pastor Matt Richard. I've recently been reading about the basis for our beautiful Lutheran liturgy and decided to watch an online communion service at our former Baptist church. To say I cringed is an understatement. Orthodoxy does indeed influence orthopraxy and vice versa. Niall says, my vote goes to Pastor Matt Richard, hands down. I grew up in the ELCA and went on a walkabout in the wild hinterland of evangelicalism after leaving home. I tried every flavor, even played in the worship band at a local megachurch. Lutherans are completely outclassed by evangelicals when it comes to putting together a great song and dance for Sunday, and they've refined the art of emotional manipulation to near perfection. But when some poor, benighted Lutheran decides to jump on the bandwagon, it always seemed to be a couple of old hippies strumming guitars or playing jazz flute. Only one person in the back clapping and the congregation mumbling along with the words on the projector screen. It's lame, cringeworthy, and just downright weird. Lutherans should be Lutherans. We've got hundreds of years of corporate experience doing what we do best, sacramental, liturgical, and Christ-centered worship. 500 years from now, we'll be doing the same thing because law and gospel are always relevant. Lori says, hello from League City, Texas, voting for soundbite number 3 without hesitation. Having personally experienced, and sadly, that all the practices derived from doctrine and that practice eventually impacts doctrine, changes it, waters it down, or eliminates it. I believe that every LCMS member should memorize Dr. Richard's statements in order that they not fall prey to the enticements to be more like the churches down the street. We should defend what makes Lutheranism Lutheran, not try to fit it into a mold created outside, no matter how popular at the moment that is. As he so eloquently stated, doctrine matters, practice matters. They are not insignificant, as many would lead us to believe, but are the core of our faith. Bravo, Dr. Richard. Keep preaching. Keep the faith. And then there's Chad in Luxembourg, Wisconsin. Chad says, these are all excellent. Having difficulty choosing, so I will go with soundbite number 2, as it deals with the Holocaust of our time, abortion. According to your votes on this Friday afternoon, the winner is soundbite number 3, Dr. Matt Richard, on how Lutherans become Baptists.
Doctrine and practice are separated. In other words, as long as I maintain a solid doctrine, it doesn't matter what I do with practice. And so what ends up happening is this, is if we can isolate our doctrine in our mind, saying, you know what, I'm going to be a Lutheran in my doctrine, that's over here in this compartment, but then in practice, I can embrace these other things in practice, and I don't have to worry about the practice because it cannot impact the doctrine. Now, here's the fallacy in this kind of thinking, is that all practice is derived from doctrine. And so if I take a different practice from, let's just say, a Baptist church, and I incorporate that into a Lutheran church, what I am actually incorporating is not a neutral practice. I'm actually incorporating a Baptist practice that is birthed out of Baptist theology. And so that theology, the Baptist church, now is being placed within the context of that Lutheran church service. So I have Baptist theology in the form of its practice, and then off to the side, I have my Lutheran doctrine. Now, what I'm not realizing is that it's like putting oil and water together in the same container. They don't mix. They're not cohesive. There's no symmetry between the two of them. And so you create a great deal of confusion and problems when you mix practice and doctrine that are not the same. Because again, doctrine always influences practice. And then also practice has a subtle way of coming back around, kind of a circle, a parallel pattern around, and it can actually impact our doctrine.
That's winner of Soundbite of the Week this week, Soundbite number 3, Dr. Matt Richard, on how Lutherans become Baptists. The LPL bundle package goes to Riley and to Lydia. If you would send us your shirt size and your mailing address to talkback@issuesetc.org, we'll send you the LPR bundle package. Picking up on Dr. Matt Richard's soundbite, how Lutherans become Baptists, LCMS worship nurtures a culture and love of Lutheran worship. They've produced hymn studies, lectionary summaries, prayers, and more. You can download them for free at lcms.org/worship, lcms.org/worship. Well, next week on Issues Etc., we'll talk with former Planned Parenthood worker Abby Johnson about the opening of a mega abortion clinic in the St. Louis Metro East. We'll have Pastor Brian Wolf-Miller introduce us to the Book of John, and we'll get a review of the movie Joker from Pastor Ted Geese, and we'll discuss the Lord's Prayer with Pastor Peter Bender. It's really not that complicated. It is natural. What you do is based upon what you believe, and what you believe informs what you do in all of life, not only in worship, but maybe especially so in worship. That doctrine determines what practices happen on Sunday morning, and those practices teach. If you adopt a practice that is foreign to your theology, guess what? You will be teaching a foreign theology, a false theology. Now, what responsible congregation would want to do something like that? Unless, of course, they want that foreign theology. Unless, in this case, Lutherans really want to be Baptists. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. our mailing address, issues, etc. P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.